is the Pedestrian Podcast.
I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We're going to go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
The official podcast of the UK Seahawkers.
We are going to follow you. You lead us, okay? Like I told you before, you lead us to darkness, we will follow you.
Here are your hosts, Stuart Court.
I'm probably wrong. I am wrong on a hell of a lot of things.
And Adam Nathan.
And I think if that's the philosophy you have going into every game, more often than not, if you score more points, you'll win.
Go Hawks.
Hello and welcome to the first ever Pedestrian Podcast, the official UK Seahawkers podcast. My name is Stuart and I'm today joined by my fellow Pedestrian Podcasters, Ross Ball and Adam Nathan. How are we, chaps?
Very good, mate. How are you?
Not too bad. Mr. Nathan?
Doing very well, thank you. Now we're here. Started from the bottom, now the whole team here. Started from the bottom, now we're here.
To another episode of the Pedestrian Podcast, still the one and only official UK Seahawkers podcast. South Stewart Court this week is joined, as ever, by Mr. Adam Nathan. How are we, sir?
I'm good. It's been fun listening to you do five takes of the opening. And all I can say is I'm pleased we finally got there. Maybe we haven't, but I think we should be there now.
Is the Athletics and friend of the podcast, Mike Dugar. How are we, sir?
What up, guys? What up, what up? Happy to hop on with you, as always. You guys know that.
Jessamyn McIntyre, how are we?
We are wonderful. It is Apple Cup week, and everything is rocking here in Seattle. About to head over to the Palouse tomorrow. Enjoy some turkey and get after the game. Thanks for having me, guys.
Our guest on the Pedestrian Podcast this week is Mr. Jeff Perlman. How are we, sir?
I'm good. That was a awesome introduction. Thank you so much.
No worries. I appreciate it. Not just any guest, the former Big Ten champ with Penn State, a semi-finalist in 2005 for the Davey O'Brien Award, a man who came fifth in the 2005 Heisman voting before being a fourth-round NFL draft pick, and of course, a Super Bowl champion. Michael Robinson, how are you, sir?
Doing great, man. Doing great, man. Glad to be a part of the show.
Rob Stater is joining us once again. How are we, Rob?
I'm good, thanks, guys. Yeah, not too bad. Glad the football's back. Just wish the Seahawks had had a better start.
As we look ahead to the Bills on Monday night, Kevin, are you there?
I'm here.
How are we, Kevin?
I'm good, very well. How are you guys doing?
Not too bad, Kevin.
Better now.
We'd be better with five wins than four wins and a tie, but, you know, can't have it all your own way.
Hey, everybody would be better with one more or whatever it is.
Very true. That's true. Not penalties, though. Not one more penalty.
To another episode of the Pedestrian Podcast as we edge closer to the magic century mark. Myself, Stuart Court, is as ever joined by Mr. Adam Nathan. How are we, sir? Welcome to the Pedestrian Podcast, emanating live, I love saying that, from the Barrow Boy and Banker in London Bridge.
So the first interview we've ever done live as a part of the podcast, we're in the pub and I'm joined by Anna, who is the president of the Renton Seahawkers, who have a great relationship with the UK Seahawkers. We're always in touch and we bump into each other at home games and now road games. And how's your trip going so far?
You know, it's amazing.
It's a strong start. Anyway, it's usually me that does the faux pas. Or sometimes it is a wild world. Welcome to the 100th Pedestrian Podcast, still the official UK Seahawkers podcast. This is a bit different, a bit special, because as Adam said before, it's a bit more professional of a production. Myself, Stuart Court, is, as I just said, joined as ever by Mr. Adam Nathan. How are we, sir?
I'm good. Why is it? You know, why is it so professional, Stuart? Tell the listeners.
We are coming sort of live from the 710 ESPN studios in Seattle, Washington, Adam.
Yeah, so that noise you're hearing, loyal listener, in inverted commas, listeners, is Stuart's actual voice. So for the first time ever in 100 episodes, you are going to get to understand a word he's saying. So what a joy that will be for all of you.
And again, you're miles away and 15 minutes late.
I'm not 15 minutes late. You said I will be on in 15 minutes and I said I'll be there in 5. And then continuing a theme from the week, I was getting abused on social media by the pair of you hyenas in the studio who have not introduced the second person yet. So it's just an on-running theme that I'm being bullied on this podcast, which is fine. I can take it. But, you know, there's enough documentation to back up that I was not late. I was, in fact, on time perfectly.
Is this your equivalent of Me Too? Is this like your cancel culture thing?
I think that might be slightly stretching the level, and I think we don't want to get ourselves embroiled in something quite that deep at this stage. Also, I'm not sure if 710 are like listening and they can allow to hear stuff like this, so who knows.
You're just gonna have to take all of our branding off of here.
I know, yeah. I won't swear. I'll try not to anyway.
Right, yeah, and as Adam said, we are joined by someone else for a part of the podcast, our friend and Washington State Cougar Siren reporter and the producer of The Morning Show on 710 ESPN, Jessamyn McIntyre. How are we?
Thanks for having me. I am great. So much better than Adam.
Before we get started, massively do appreciate you sorting this out for us. We spoke at the end of our last podcast saying, all right, we'll just do it in 2 weeks when I'm back in the same time zone. And
got to do it here.
You popped up and completely broke Adam's spirit, so
look, I'm just amazed that one person in the world actually read a tweet that you sent out from the account did something with it.
That's
the biggest surprise to me, that we actually have one interaction on the social media. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's usually like all the ones with like the peanut as the profile picture. Right, so yeah, this week we're going to go through everything that happened last week in Ohio, look ahead to the Ravens game and the return of a certain secondary member, and all the nonsense and lively behavior from other NFC West teams and other NFL teams as well. We'll start off with the Cleveland Browns game.
No, boring, Stu. How's your time in Seattle?
I've literally been here not even 24 hours yet. I landed 23 hours ago.
Okay, and what have you done? That's much more interesting.
Slept for about 6 and tried not to sleep for about 17. I went to a trivia night, they call it over here, and I'm not quiz night, it's a trivia night at a brewery down in Kenmore.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently Mark Summers is a game show host over here. It's the first question. I've never heard of Mark Summers.
What? Double Dare?
Yeah.
You've never heard of Mark Summers?
Well, I did get one of the questions because no one else knew what show Ben Bailey hosted.
Nope.
Cash Cap. I know that.
Oh, yeah. I should know that, actually.
So, and then obviously,
both sound like invented imaginary programs.
Oh, Cash Cab is brilliant, Adam.
Really?
It's in New York. The two people get in the back of a cab. And then they have to answer questions and they win like a certain amount of money.
Yeah, okay. So imagine you're getting into a cab and you're on your way to your destination. You have a certain amount of questions that you answer right, and they start off easy and they get harder. And if you get them all right and you get to your destination without getting one wrong, you win Cash Cab. And then if you don't, they just kick you out in the middle of your ride.
My cab rides normally are, hi, mate. Yeah, Adam. Silence for 17.6 minutes. Yeah, thanks a lot, mate. Just on the left here. Thanks a lot. 5 stars. That's basically how most of my cab rides go.
Well, not all 5 stars, Adam.
They're not all 5 stars. And typically when there's Seattle natives in the cab, that's when the Uber rating takes an absolute downward spiral.
Yeah, so Adam's Uber rating took a crash last year in London when Walter Jones decided to scream when he thought a bus was coming straight towards him, and did a duet with one of our friends, Jana, doing Tennessee Whiskey by Chris Stapleton.
What?
Going from Kilburn to Walt's Hotel. Is it Mayfair's hotel was?
No, in Baker Street.
Oh, yeah. It was wild. But yeah.
Speaking of Baker.
Yeah. No, nice.
Hey.
Nice.
There's a pro.
Professional.
There's a pro. First rodeo.
I do a little bit.
That was good.
The Seahawks.
Write that down. That was a good.
Good.
We've been playing for 4 years, so we might be at the league one.
Transitions.
So the Seahawks.
Is there like a light that says go to a commercial? Because that could be fun.
No.
So what's that studio being used for? Surely there's just one studio that everyone goes in.
There's loads.
There are several studios in a tri-station cluster, Adam, which is what we have here in the beautiful city of Seattle, the number 13 market in the country. And, you know, we've got the biggest news radio crew in the state. So, yeah, we've got loads of studios.
Are you going to have a picture of Stu on the wall somewhere with the new presenter from the show?
As if it wasn't already there.
It's on the
I just realized that someone that listened to this as a podcast expecting some content.
Yeah.
We can edit a lot, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's took 99, so we might as well keep it on for a number 100. So the Seahawks went to Ohio, played Baker Mayfield, OBJ, and the 2019 Cleveland Browns, and got out of Dodge, Adam. 5-1 Seahawks. Up top five, top six in most power rankings, as useless and pointless as they are. But it felt a bit different for a large chunk of that, didn't it, on Sunday?
It is amazing how they can go from so shit to so good, like the drop of a hat. It's so much fun to watch because you just never know what you're going to get. Against the Rams, I thought they were going to concede like 50 points in the first half in the first 2 minutes. And then against the Browns, I thought that, you know, we were on for at least like a 40 burger against. And they just go and turn it around and win. Like it's just so much fun.
I mean, it was 26 after Austin Siebert missed a extra point after a Ricky Seals-Jones, because it's that usual Seahawks things where tight ends you've never heard of pop up and score impressive looking touchdowns, don't they?
That's the official AFC on the road touchdown against the Seahawks. I think Tyler Eifert scored about 17, Antonio Gates about 33 of them. Gronk's got like in the triple figures of those against us. So yeah, that's the official AFC touchdown against the Seahawks.
Yeah, and it all started to turn around, Adam, when Brian Schottenheimer wasn't calling plays. Imagine that.
No, I think that's probably a little bit harsh. I don't think that was actually that coordinated.
Yeah, the Seahawks.
He's doing better.
He is. But he is helped by a quarterback playing like few other quarterbacks. Well, no other quarterback is playing like in the NFL this year, and probably few others in recent years. I mean, 23 for 33, 295 yards, two touchdowns. And it was 72% completion. And he has 14 touchdowns, zero interceptions through the first six, seven weeks of the season. It's fun watching this guy play at the minute, isn't it?
It's amazing. Like he's playing so well, it's so much fun to watch. Jessamine, how is he like ranking now or trending to rank as like all time Seattle sports heroes? Because he's a bit of a dweeb. I can't imagine he's that great with like the media. He doesn't have his own show on the radio, but like where does he stand kind of as a media ranking guy for all the guys you've seen in Seattle?
Well, he's got to be number one in the Seahawks realm of things. I think he's vaulted himself there by now. It was hard to say in his first, you know, his two Super Bowls back to back were only, you know, a couple years into the league. So it was hard to put him there even then having that much success. But now his eighth year in the league and doing what he's doing has been to the playoffs, the postseason, all but one of his, you know, in his career. I mean, this is unprecedented. And I mean, you got to give a lot of credit to Pete Carroll, but if you're going to expand it out to all Seattle sports, it's hard to mess with the kid. You know, Ken Griffey Jr. probably, I think maybe in hindsight he'll be at that level, but right now I think Ken's got him.
Yeah, because if he does play 15, 20 a career in this city,
he
can literally go.
Then he'll be there.
Walk on water. He's going to walk.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's an offense which Adam really doesn't have. I mean, he lost Doug Baldwin. We kind of worried about that all off season, but he hasn't, let alone skip a beat. He's kind of just found a new beat to beat the drum to, isn't he?
He's great, and you know the receivers are doing a great job for him. It's such a shame to lose Will Disley for the season because he was just growing into the role so much and playing at kind of like an all-pro level, really, if you look at the numbers. And, you know, for a couple of idiots that do a podcast, we did wonder, like, when, like, DK Metcalf would start to look like a real receiver as opposed to just a guy that you stick out on the left and fling it to him every now and again. But he had a couple of plays that looked like a real receiver plays, like on slants. And if he can add that to his game, that should be really promising going forward.
Yeah, like I said a couple of weeks ago, he's starting to run onto the right side of the field, which is something he didn't do at Ole Miss, let alone. You know,
it's like the anti-Zoolander.
Have you had that like store for like 3 days?
I didn't. I swear that just came to me. I'm in the wrong game.
one of those receivers, Jaron Brown, caught two both Russell Wilson touchdowns on Sunday on just three catches in an NFL, in a Seahawks career, which is barely registered for probably most, well, a majority of Seahawks fans. And he has seven touchdowns now on just 25 catches. I mean, efficiency like that is pretty wild and pretty impressive.
There can't be, like, I don't know, like, when what they make the stats to, whether it's like you have to have minimum X number of touchdowns. But let's say he was to get to like 10 touchdowns on whatever that would be, like 33, 34 catches. That must be the highest percentage of any player.
It must be. I mean, because when we talked about how Jimmy Graham was, how often he got the end zone, how quickly he passed every other tight end in Seahawks history. Jarrell Brown is doing that, and he was cut 7 weeks ago. but someone like that stepping up is kind of what we hoped, and it's kind of what a need to keep happening heading into this week against a pretty tough, well, it got tougher this week, secondary for the Ravens have, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to need it. And but, you know, if they can have Brown, Metcalf, Moore and Lockett all playing kind of to the level they are, with Wilson playing to the level he is, then you're fine at that position, which is a bit of a surprise given where we thought we were going to be kind of when Baldwin said he was going to retire. We thought we were knackered, but I think we're in a pretty good spot.
Yeah, I mean, Jesse, obviously you follow the work for the Cougars and all their air raid stuff. I mean, the number 5-6 receiver doing stuff like Jarrell Brown's doing is important at every level, isn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely is. I mean, you want a lot of horses in the pen, you know. Let's go. You can't, especially, well, in the air raid, it's a little bit different than the establish the run offense that the Seahawks run. But, you know, when it comes to the college level in that offense, it requires a lot of rotation. You just can't have guys out there, you know, running, you know, 45 to 60 plays. And so I think that when it comes to the Seahawks, Pete Carroll has been able to stick to his establish the run philosophy so much that in the absence of what you'd consider Pro Bowl wide receivers, it's been just fine because they have someone who's so efficient like Tyler Lockett who can go and get it. We saw it 2 weeks ago, and the most magnificent toe tap I've ever seen was absolutely unbelievable. And then, you bring in a big body like DK Metcalf. They've not drafted a guy like that. They draft smaller wide receivers. You know, even they did draft one this year in John Ursua, but they have guys that can make plays, and you don't have to have that size. I was so excited when they did take DK, though, just because they haven't invested in that type. They've brought back veterans. You know, I think that they would have loved if Brandon Marshall could have been that last year. I think they loved it when Mike Williams kind of was back in Pete Carroll's early days here. But they didn't invest from the beginning in those kind of people. I think it goes to the always compete mentality that they have over there.
Yeah, that established a run, not getting making Pro Bowls for the wide receiver, is kind of what made Doug Baldwin kind of someone you can appreciate more, because he did grumble, but he didn't grumble to the levels that we've seen other players on this team in recent years, obviously around the league, complain because they're not getting the ball.
Yeah, no, it's just different here. And Doug kind of, you know, he came from, I don't want to say nothing, he got a Stanford education, but he came out, did not get drafted, and, you know, had to come out with a 90-man, you know, roster that they start training camp with, made all the cuts and everything. So, and then he contributed as an undrafted rookie, and he had that chip on his shoulder. So I think that he wasn't about to be a selfish player. He just has a lot of thoughts and feelings that he doesn't mind expressing, but it didn't have to go. It didn't have to do with ball distribution.
Yeah. Established a run, and they did once they got their sea legs from under them after a slow start. Chris Carson had on 2,424 yards and one touchdown, his third straight 100-yard game. It's been a few years, but that physicality at that position from this team is there, and is it much of a coincidence that it's there and the team are sitting pretty on the win-loss column as they are entering the Ravens week?
I mean, there's so much like analytic stuff about whether running matters or whether it doesn't, and like whatever, it's boring. But I don't know how you could minimize the impact he's had. Like over the last three games, he's been so important at, you know, setting the tone. I know this is all kind of cliche nonsense, but you only need to watch what he's done, like, and the runs he's made and when he's made them have all been so crucially important that whilst obviously I'm kind of on board with a lot of the analytics stuff, like, I don't know how you can, I don't think the team could have won these games without him, which is not something I would ever expect to have said about Chris Carson going into this year. Like, I thought he was going to be good, but like, the 4.2 yard a clip kind of guy who, you know, is necessary, but we're groaning that they're using him too much. I think the way they've used him in the last 3 or 4 weeks has been perfection, really.
He's properly,
and you have to respect it. I mean, even if they're not gonna run him as many times as they have been during a game, now anyone watching film has to honor that. And the defense has to stay true, and that gives Russell Wilson the ability to open up. And I'm not saying they're gonna make that their offensive game plan, but if they see a glitch in somebody else's giddy up on the defensive side of the ball, all of a sudden, you know, Russell might air it out just because they have to defend the run.
Defensively, Adam, it was not pretty to watch. The massive Nick Chubb run, the highlight, is that the right word? I'm not sure that's the right word, but you get what I mean. But they did come away, Adam, with 5 turnovers, including Trey Flowers' first in the NFL. It took a while, but it was pretty cool to see him finally get his hands on the ball in meaningful play, wasn't it?
It was honestly like you'd flipped after the end of the first quarter, you decided that, okay, the 11 scrubs aren't going to play anymore. We're going to bring 11 new guys in, because they were full lol in that first quarter, let's be honest.
Can't win the game in the first quarter, Adam.
Oh, I know. I mean, if ever there was a game, like, I don't necessarily want to think about what Pete has kind of arousing dreams about, but this was a wet dream Pete Carroll game, to be honest. Like, everything that could possibly have happened to, like, fit what he loves doing. Can you imagine him bouncing around in the locker room afterwards? He must have been giving it all. That, can you win a game in the first quarter? He must have loved it so much. And I think it's entirely detrimental, and one day it's going to catch up with us, like it did in the playoffs a couple of times against Carolina and Atlanta, because sometimes you can get absolutely whipped in the first quarter and not recover. But even then, it was just such a weird game. Like, the way in which the turnovers came, they gave us so many chances. And I just thought they were going to, you know, push back on the Browns quite a few times. They just never did. They kept turning the ball over. And it was great. I mean, it was very bendy, but not break, like, very, very bendy.
Is that a technical term?
Yeah, I think that's what they do in their Wednesday film sessions, to talk about how bendy they were. It was very bendy, but it didn't break.
No.
And as long as it's not going to break, like, I'm tired of being, you know, quibbling about it and people saying, oh, they're not this, they're not that. It's so much fun. So much fun right now.
It is. I think the Browns, for certain parts, obviously the earlier part of the game especially, they showed the signs of the team everyone kind of expected them to be, didn't they? And we kind of just allowed them to show their thing, and then we go, actually, yeah, come on, let's shut this down. But the one DB who didn't get an interception, so he hasn't got one in 2019 season, is probably the one playing the best ball of all four, isn't he? Shaquille Griffin, again, was mightily impressive. Played his part in the tip drill, which T2 got his hands on. But he is playing, I mean, there's a clip of the Alistair Corpse put on Twitter where he's stride for stride with OBJ 30 yards downfield, and it's pretty damn impressive to watch Shaq Griffin play after what was a step back year in 2018.
It's great. I think he might get a pick next week, but if he does, Mike Dugar is going to be just intolerable to listen to, because I was listening to his podcast, the Man to Man podcast, and he said that I don't know how Mike has managed to get so important these days, but apparently he walked into the locker room and said, "Hey Shaq, when are you going to get a pick?" Now, this is not the Mike that started out when we spoke to him a couple of years ago for the first time, but apparently Mike's running the locker room these days.
He's kind of a big deal out here.
Yeah. I mean, people in the UK either think he's Shaq Griffin or he's talking to Shaq Griffin. So, you know, I think he had got stopped 5 times in the UK by fans asking if he was Shaq Griffin.
Yeah, there's a picture from someone we're seeing this week out here, and it's a picture with her, I think Kev, Mike's mate, and Mike Dugar, and the thing is, I thought he was Shaq.
Oh my gosh, that's so fantastic. You know, Shaq Griffin, though, you know, to the point you were making about him having such a tremendous year this year after last, he spent a lot of time, he lost weight, 20 pounds in the offseason, and says that he feels faster and that he recovers a lot faster as well.
He's college weight, isn't he?
Yeah, he is taken off a lot, and it's only helped him. And so I just think it's a testament to the hard work that he puts in the offseason. Shaquem shed some weight too, obviously not as much as Shaq, but for his position. But they both put in a lot of work, and they've obviously it's paying dividends right now.
Yeah, one cause concern, Adam, slightly, obviously one person is making his comeback this week in Jaron Reed, but that pass rush is, I think, does it lead the league in lack of QB hits and sacks? I think I saw that. But it nearly got there, but the teams are getting the ball out increasingly quicker against this team than ever before. And it's kind of lessening their impact, although they are still there. And obviously, Clowney is still ridiculously fun to watch.
I thought they were collapsing the pocket quite well. I mean, they didn't get enough hits and whatever, but I'm sure that's going to come. I mean, old man Ziggy is not necessarily going to be the guy that he was 5 years ago. But you would have to hope that with Clowney, Ford, Jefferson, Reed coming back, like, it's got to happen soon. I mean, they're being disruptive enough to make stuff happen. But yeah, like I praised them maybe overly, the defensive line, on the Seahawks podcast on field goals earlier today. Humble brag. But yeah, like,
did you record that in Seattle, Adam?
Pardon?
Did you record that in Seattle, Adam?
I didn't record that in Seattle. But
fired again. You know.
Sorry. Gee, I'm gonna go make some dinner because it's dinner time now. Going back to my very professional point, I think it's coming, and I think they're playing kind of well enough ish to keep us in games, and hopefully the hits will start coming.
Yeah, and I've said my be helped, Jess, by number 91 now. She's helpful when I've got a J Reed 90 jersey, but number 91, Jerome Reed, he's going to make a big difference. You'd expect.
Yes, and he's champing at the bit right now. He can't stand sitting out, and I still have to figure out how Jadeveon got that jersey. It's super top secret. It's probably like the biggest secret over at VMAC is what it cost, and I don't know. Maybe Jaron
shouldn't have done it.
Maybe Jaron was just like, "Hey, I'm not playing the first six games. You know, take it, buddy." But I don't think that's exactly how it goes. But anyway, and a lot of the thing too is like you have to remember Ziggy Ansah didn't participate in the preseason at all because he was still dealing with his shoulder injury. And then you know, Jadeveon Clowney is brand spanking new here. These guys, it's a team sport. You know, these guys can rush, but once you get that team chemistry up above, and Jaron was extremely remorseful for missing the time that he had, so he's ready to come in here and work with these guys. Now, he did get to it by NFL regulations. He was allowed to participate in preseason, so he got a little bit of work in, but now he's had to stay away from the facility for six straight weeks, and Pete Carroll says he was like a kid on Christmas coming back.
But this is kind of what we expected, and during preseason we expected Jay Reed to be a big part of it before the suspension, but now we've got Jay Reed as a big part of it plus the freak outside of him. And
yeah, I mean, you know, you can look, and it might be fun if some teams discounted what that pass rush might be if you're just looking at statistics and the lack of quarterback hits that they've had if you compare it to the rest of the league. But they are on fire. They can be on fire.
Yeah.
And Jaron was kind of, I mean, Frank Clark's little brother when it came to it. And when Frank was traded, I think Jaron was expected to take the majority of those reps and kind of step up.
Yeah. So just to wrap up, Adam, one to praise we haven't talked about on Sunday evening.
Jamarco Jones.
Yeah.
He's just coming. It's been like seamless, arguably better. We all have DJ Fluker, but you know, he didn't look that great at the start of the year, and the Rams game at the start of that, that line wasn't looking too hot. And then Jamarco came in and steadied the ship a bit, and he's been great.
Yeah, that's another draft pick I've nailed, by the way, because I love Jamarco at Ohio State. Not as much as I did Patrick Mahomes, but never mind. Yeah, I think the guy next to him deserves a bit of credit on the offense. I think Jermaine Ifedi, they give up three sacks, but
you love Ifedi.
I think I love Ifedi because everyone hates Ifedi.
Because everyone hates him.
Yeah, yeah.
Ever the country.
The correct attitude.
Yeah, because he's fine. Miles Garrett is what he's got like 17,000 sacks in 6 weeks, and apart from when Russell Wilson held onto the ball for the entirety of Bohemian Rhapsody, he was fine. But when he held onto the ball for a ridiculous amount of time, Garrett got through because Garrett is quite good at this game, Adam.
Yeah, and he's allowed.
Yeah,
and, you know, that's kind of what he's there for.
Yeah, but before we move on to the Ravens game, because I think Jess has got more important things to do, should we have a quick dive in the bin, Adam?
Well, I need to ask Jess the question that she's done some research for. What is the worst? We've done worst meat on the first podcast. What is the worst fish? And there is a correct answer here, which I will happily announce at the end of your answer.
Okay, I'm going to go with the anchovy. You know why? Because they put it on pizza. Fish doesn't belong on pizza at all. And they want to put that all over stuff like it's a condiment. They just chop up these little tiny fish and put them in salt and call it food? No, it's bait.
It goes very well
bait
with lamb.
Bait is not food.
Goes very well with lamb anchovies.
Ugh.
So quickly before Adam gives his answer, what about pineapple on pizza?
I'm down. I'm good. I'm good for pineapple on pizza. I'll eat some grilled pineapple.
Amen.
Yep. Same. All right. Adam, your
the answer. Correct answer is tinned tuna fish, which is not just the worst fish. It is the worst of all food.
See, if I mash it up with a little celery and stuff. I mean, I don't eat it, but I think anchovies is worse. Or sardines that come in like a peel back tin. Those got to be worse than canned tuna.
I'm a massive fish fan in general, to be quite honest.
Oh, when you come to Seattle.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, this morning I had a egg sandwich and asked for it not to come with egg because I don't eat egg. The cashier was completely befuddled.
I would be too. Presumably there were other things in this egg sandwich and you didn't just ask for two pieces of bread.
No. It was turkey sausage and cheese, I think.
Oh, okay. That's a legitimate sandwich.
The egg would have been great in that.
Yes, it would have.
I don't eat egg, so never have.
No one doesn't eat egg.
I do not eat egg, so.
Yeah, I have a friend that doesn't eat eggs. She's a weirdo, but she was allowed to be a picky eater as a kid. That's the thing. Parents didn't force anything on her.
Do you have a spin in the bin, Adam?
Go for it.
Cool.
First of all, this is an exciting time for our organization.
2017 Browns joined the 2008 Lions as the only teams to go 0-16.
Get in the bin.
Give me Josh Freeman, who was the 17th pick in the first round, over Cam Newton, who was the number one overall pick.
And the 2015 AP Most Valuable Player is Cam Newton.
Get in the bin.
And Chip Kelly is an evolver, and he's a smart guy, and I think he's going to go to San Francisco and they're going to be a much more viable football franchise.
That the 49ers are expected to clean house and dismiss head coach Chip Kelly.
Get in the bin.
So yeah, this week's Get in the Bin. Go on, Adam, you start off. I'm sure you're throffing at the bit.
I actually haven't thought of mine yet because I'm such a pro that I'm normally tuned to think about these at the end of the show and not as opposed to in the middle. So, I'm a man of routine when it comes to these podcasts. So you'll have to go first, and I'll think of one whilst you go.
Okay, I'm gonna go with this. It's probably beating a dead horse at this point, but the ESPN Monday Night Football commentary crew. I mean, we're on ESPN.
The worst.
Niners in like a month. Is there any way we can not like just ask Steve Rabel to pull double duty and just jump on there? I can't. This
simulcast, man.
Yeah.
Let's go.
It's atrocious. Booger doesn't know what he's watching.
I did like that he ripped the refs the way he did.
Yeah, ESPN, all I've seen on ESPN this last 24 hours is just annihilating the refs.
Well, yeah.
Every single put. Like,
it was bad.
Partner as well. You'd expect them to at least, but they're just diving in.
There's a responsibility in the media to tell it like it is a little bit, but also since Booger already put it out there, they were like, well, our guy already did it.
And the Tessitore, he shouts a lot.
Just, yeah.
Sports and it's
shouting.
So staccato and weird. Like, not every sentence, every word's like a new sentence. Just like, talk like a normal human being.
Yeah.
I mean, he was calling Valdez Scantling MVS. I mean,
where did that come from?
Like, OBJ is OBJ because he's earned the moniker somewhat, but MVS is.
It's like he was trying to own it.
Yeah.
Get a little kickback once that gets trademarked there.
But yeah, they're just the worst. Obviously, there's a lot of things bad going on, but yeah, that commentary crew is atrocious. Jeff?
I'm not even sure, like, Valdez Scantling, like, knows that his name is MVS. that's how, like, no one would know. It would get zero on Family Fortunes of, like, what is MVS?
Jess?
Yes.
Get in the bin. Something you want to put in the bin?
Okay. Is this something that? Okay, I didn't really. So it's anything, something that I hate.
It
can be anything that's just pissed you off in the last week, month, year. You've not been on for a while. So, and it preferably football related, but it can be anything,
including present company. Sort of.
Okay.
Well, for Jess's social media abuse, does, you know, she's lucky. She's skirting around the edge of the bin for me.
Okay.
I'm not going to put her in because it's not nice to be rude to hosts.
That's true. That is very true. Let's see. I was going to say I'd put the refs. I'd put the refs right there in the bin. That was just, you ruined Trey Flowers' game. And I said this on our show today, that you know how they'll go back and retroactively fine players for hits? And they'll be like, you know what? We saw that. It wasn't flagged, but that's 15 grand. I think they should pay Trey Flowers 15 grand for each of the innocuous flags that they threw at him.
And didn't he cause a fumble that they, was that him who's caused the fumble that they?
I don't know. It, there was another bad pass interference. Yeah, but
they blew it dead after the ball.
Oh, yes. Yeah, one of those. And then the Saints have gotten screwed twice on that, too, this year.
Yeah, but the Saints is funny because it really annoys Sean Payton.
Because they've
gone too far the other way, haven't they? I don't know, after all the stuff in the conference game last year, they've
We're seeing it in football with VAR as well. Like,
yeah.
It's just... all of the kind of, well, you've made the decision, but we couldn't possibly overturn it unless it's clear and obvious. Like, that's just bollocks. Like, if you've got a TV and you can watch it, then just watch it as if the ref hasn't made a decision and say whether it's X or Y. Because most of the stuff, like, Beckham was out on that catch on Tedrick Thompson. Like, his head was in Cincinnati. He was miles out. But they're like, well, you know, we haven't got an angle. But, like... if you were just watching that without any prejudice of what another guy from 50 yards has said, like, you would say no catch. So why can't you just do that? Have a TV guy that kind of works, like have a television ref as part of the referee crew who's just watching everything. And he can just have an earpiece with the head ref saying, yes, it is. No, it isn't. And then you're not undermining anyone. And it's just, it's ridiculous that the people watching on TV get a better kind of officiating product than the people that are in the stands and like actually in the game. Yeah. It's stupid. Everyone's watching the same pictures.
They need to make them full time. That's what they need to do. Don't these guys shouldn't be working at Foot Locker or doing whatever they do in the off season. They make them full time.
Yes, I don't think they actually work.
I don't think they can afford other clubs.
he's now an analyst, but Sterator was a college basketball ref as well. While he was an NFL ref, he was refing college basketball games.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they don't get paid NFL money. No. And I mean, I'm not saying, but they should be working year round. I mean, we were saying today that players work year round. Well, guess what? This is a $9 billion a year industry. And you have people on the field determining the fate, the outcome for these people putting their lives out there every single day. And they're making, you know, not enough to live on.
Yeah.
Have them go to classes during the year. Make them go to conferences. Have this be a full-time job.
Yeah. They're full-time in England, aren't they, the refs now?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Remember, of course, you guys are so far ahead of us.
Yeah. 8 hours.
Have you got anyone, Adam?
Yeah, I think I really, really hate Marcus Peters.
Oh.
And I'm just so excited that he's going to get rinsed again on Sunday. He must have thought that nightmare is gone. And he has to have it back again. So I'm going to preemptively put Marcus Peters in the bin for that just annoyingly snarly, look how hard and tough I am guy, when Moore's going to step one way, go around him again, Metcalf's going to burn him again, and it's going to be just gorgeous to watch.
Yeah. Well, talking of preemptively putting people in the bin, anyone who boos Earl Thomas, that's what I'm going to put in.
Yes,
this weekend,
absolutely.
That's a good one.
It's just, it's dumb.
What are you getting at?
He flipped off someone who wasn't.
Booing is stupid anyway. Booing is the stupidest
booing
thing.
Booing is the most satisfying thing in the world when someone deserves to be booed.
I can't imagine just like standing there going, like, I'll boo someone who tells a bad joke to their face. But being in a stance and watching these athletes and going, boo, I got you. Like, that doesn't make sense.
The only ex player ever booed at them is Craig Bellamy, and that's more than justified.
I'd love to know who the first person to ever boo was and the first person to ever clap.
Oh, yeah, the origin of the boo and the origin of the clap. I'm going to bang my hands together. Then this guy will know that I really like him.
Yeah, and as a result, that will be seen as some kind of praiseworthy thing.
Yeah, but Thomas is one of the best players at his position, and we saw him play in that position at his possible, probable prime for this team, Adam. It's more about appreciating what we had, as we keep saying about all those that era of players, more than justifying some weird macho thing. I don't know why anyone would.
I mean, let's be honest, Jude. The people that would boo Earl Thomas are the same ones that boo Richard Sherman and boo Michael Bennett. And we've kind of got that demographic of person in the bin already, without being too specific on a lot of things.
Yep.
So without trying to Icarus too close to the sun. I think there's people have probably been dealt with already.
Yeah, they have. Obviously, I'm at the game this week of 60 seconds.
Oh, thanks.
It's all right, Adam. Any opportunity? I won't be booing. I'll actually be wearing an Earl Thomas jersey, I think, on Sunday.
I like
quite
it.
Quite right.
Have you got to go, Jess?
I do have some work to do, but you can continue recording this podcast in our fabulous studios here in Seattle. I have some post-show stuff that I will get going, but I'll be right down the hall.
Massively appreciate you letting us do it and jumping on as well. Where can people catch you if they want to follow all your...
Let's see. On Twitter, I'm at Jessamyn McIntyre without the E at the end because there weren't enough letters. And then we have a full slate of shows. If you're a Seahawks fan, on 710 ESPN Seattle, we do have an app. It's free, and you can listen to all of our shows. You can also listen to them via podcast because listening to them live will probably be different with the whole 8 hours. And so they're available on, iTunes, Stitcher, everything.
Cool.
So, yeah.
Cool. Thank you.
All of them. Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much.
On first down, Wilson keeps. Surveys, nowhere to go, and back in the end zone. Touchdown! What a catch by Tyler Lockett. Let's take a look. Catch, feet. That is unbelievable. If you'd have told me that his feet were in play, I'd have said there is no way that this ball's caught with his feet in the field of play. I mean, there was great coverage. I don't even know how Russell Wilson thought he could fit that ball in.
I'll just come and find you when we're done. So yeah, moving on, the Seahawks now return home to face the Baltimore Ravens. We just touched on him briefly in Get in the Bin, but Earl Thomas is going to take most of the headlines pregame, isn't he, Adam? He already is.
100%. I mean, it's interesting because he's probably not been playing as well as a lot of people would expect. Although, when you come off the back of two broken legs back-to-back, the fact that he's playing at all is arguably remarkable. But it's interesting because, Baker Mayfield challenged the ego of Richard Sherman and lost.
Yeah.
In let's say this game was 3 years ago and Earl Thomas freakishly left, left the team. You'd be saying like, don't touch the middle at all. Whatever you're doing, like that is a no-fly zone, as it was well famed over here. We're not going to touch that zone. We're going to work on the outside and whatever. Now, when you're watching Earl Thomas play and he's not at a particularly high level, you kind of wonder if that's a position that can be exposed by some, if Wilson's at an MVP level again, that could be an area to do some damage.
Yeah, and obviously that secondary for the Ravens is impressive on name alone. Obviously Marcus Peters joins Marlon Humphrey and Earl back there. It's a pretty formidable looking lineup. But yeah, there is chinks in this armor, and teams who most people would say are lesser teams than these Seahawks have caused them a lot of issues, Adam. So, as you say, it's signs for encouragement against a team which is traditionally a pretty shut down, awkward, gnarly defense.
I've got visions of a long non-Chris Carson running touchdown.
Okay.
That Nick Chubb one from a couple of weeks ago, I don't know. I don't know if Penny's going to be healthy or if it's going to be like a dump off to CJ process or something. I just got visions of a non Chris Carson runner is going to break off a big run.
Yeah, I agree. I think you've talked me into it. I kind of see him. I don't mean they've traded one of their linebackers to the Rams, so he must be good. I've never heard of him. but end around for Tyler, I think that could be the way.
Really?
Yeah, man. Maybe not 80, 70 yards, but then around the tire, just because they're going to be aggressive early, and just kind of one way to stop that is, it'd be an unbelievable amount of fun if it's Clowney doing it, but yeah, Tyler Lockett.
By the way, talking of fun plays, that fake toss to Carson was the greatest play in Seahawks history.
Yeah.
I mean, it sent me in three different directions. So God knows what it did to the Cleveland defense. It was just glorious.
Yeah, it was fun. This is a team, though, the Baltimore Ravens messaged you this morning for me. Their leading receiver is their quarterback, Adam. Their leading rusher is their quarterback, and their leading receiver is their tight end. I mean, that's very Seahawky, isn't it?
Yeah, I have no recollection of you messaging this to me, but I'm sure you did. No, you definitely didn't.
Okay.
I won't hold it against
breaking
you.
You've obviously got
other friends that you're WhatsApping about the Seahawks, but don't worry, I'm not bitter. I mean, they are a team that I think it's probably Damashek on podcast is interesting saying that, you know, this is not necessarily an offensive strategy that can work in 2 years' time when there's tape of it. But it kind of needs to work now. And it certainly was working. I just wonder if it may be being slightly found out at this stage. But with our defenses kind of on the slightly ropier side, yeah. I think it's probably the toughest battle they've had so far. And I think the way in which they come through it, I think that this game is going to dictate and portray a lot about what both teams are and what they're going to be for the rest of the year.
Yeah, I mean, but they're not going to face another quarterback, and they haven't faced a quarterback like Lamar Jackson. Because he's not just a runner, he's a physical running quarterback. He was kind of like Cam Newton was 3-4 years ago, just a bit safer when he at the end of the play, isn't he?
I mean, you're not overlooking to hurt someone, but you are going to have to hit him.
Yeah.
You're going to have to try and discourage him from doing that. And, yeah. You know, with a bit of luck, if Clowney can shed a block and just, you know, absolutely crack him between the numbers, that would be kind of a, especially when he's a runner and he loses all of his quarterback privileges from a hits perspective. You know, you just need to try and get the seed of doubt into his mind that if I do this, I'm going to get whacked.
Yeah, but but also, I think their backup's RG3, isn't it?
Well, you know, he's not going to want any piece of the Seahawks running because he's tried that before and it kind of ended his career.
Yeah, that's why he's the backup. We talked about the deep ball, the deep play, the big play from the Seahawks against the Ravens defense, but they've got, he exploded on the scene through the first 2-3 weeks of the season. He's been banged up the last few weeks, but Lamar Jackson can and has and will get the ball if he's active and healthy to Marquise Hollywood Brown. I mean, he's one of the more explosive, exciting players in college football at Oklahoma last year, and he's a big play threat every time he lines up, weirdly for, maybe uncommonly for the deep ball. More often inside rather than on the outside, running straight down the sideline. I mean, he's a big play waiting to happen, isn't he?
Yeah, and look, Lamar has probably not been great at throwing outside the numbers, but he's certainly got a very good and very accurate deep straight ball. And it's a position an area of the field which we've not covered ourselves in glory trying to stop. So it's going to be a big test for those two safeties to see how they deal with it, because any slips there and it's 7 points against.
Yeah, as I said, their leading receiver is their tight end. Mark Andrews, also from Oklahoma, has 410 receiving yards so far in the season, 3 touchdowns. He's emerged. He kind of exploded on the scene at the same time Lamar Jackson took the starting quarterback reigns in Baltimore, and he's tight end position is, as you said earlier, it's a long held concern for the Seahawks defense and how they approach things, isn't it? And he's going to be one of the more impressive ones entering a game than we're going to see this season.
I mean, you're not really going to want, you'll be pretty nervy if it's going to be kind of KJ Wright or a linebacker covering it. I wonder how long they can persist with that. I mean, obviously they got done with Ricky Seals-Jones touchdown. I think Kendricks just about tipped a ball away either two plays before or two plays after from the same thing happening. And I just wonder if they're playing with fire a bit too much with how many linebackers they're keeping on the field who are not really playing as well as you may have hoped. So maybe this is a time where they kind of, maybe Akeem King or whatever can come in and be more of a covering guy in that situation. I don't know. I don't know what you make of that.
Yeah, I think it'll be something. I think a lot will be said by the healthy scratches on Sunday, because if Akeem King is active, then you'd expect him to probably take the tight ends. I mean, but then if he's not, you'd expect anyway at some point to see Cody Barton, wouldn't you?
Brody Carson.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. Or they're going to play in, you know, nickel and dime a lot more. I think Bobby needs to this will be a game that I'm sure Bobby is really looking forward to. I think I messaged you guys in the middle of the second quarter on Sunday and said I've not heard Wagner's name yet.
No.
But I can imagine he's going to be all over the place on Sunday, and I'm really looking forward to it. I think Jackson versus Wagner is what's going to be, you know, whoever comes out on top of that battle is going to win the match.
Yeah, I'm like to say aided by the fact I'm here, but I am massively looking forward to this game on Sunday. I think it's going to be this is a game if you would not been surprised to see flexed into primetime kind of thing, is it? It's a proper. I mean, Lamar and Russ is. It's going to be the banner, but as you say, him against Wagner, and he got Russ against all the old Thomas stuff. It's going to be a proper game on Sunday.
Yeah, it's going to be great. Hopefully, the weather doesn't impact it too much. You know, Wilson's not ideal in the rain. I don't know what it's been like over there so far, but I think they'll be looking for rain a lot more than we will.
Yeah, definitely. But one other thing on their offense, Mark Ingram, Adam, he's. He left New Orleans for that focus role, but as we said, he's been surpassed in the rushing stakes by his quarterback. But Mark Ingram is that physical guy we talked about with Chris Carson, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, look, Lamar was probably always going to be the number one rusher there. It may not be the case by the end of the season when he's looking after his body a bit more. But yeah, Ingram was a smart signing, and he's probably done. I would say he's been good as advertised, really.
Yeah. One you want to iron for the Seahawks on either side of the ball on Sunday?
I'm not necessarily expecting him to be like the best player by any stretch, but I'm looking forward and interested to see how many snaps Jaron Reed's going to get and see how they use him.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's going to be presence, but what his presence means for Quinton Jefferson and Brandon Jackson was inactive this last week. Rasheen Green. Is he going to see his play? And obviously, Pete Carroll, I think, talked about how they bought him as a run defender, but without Jaron Reed, he's had to do everything. So if he can just focus on that one aspect of the game he's brought in to do, it could benefit the wider group, couldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I was just thinking about that today. Do you think with like Reed, Jefferson, and Puna, like they could play a little bit of 3-4 every now and again? I know that you don't like play 3-4 half the time and 4-3 other half, but I don't know that personnel wise, it looks like that they wouldn't be far off having a pretty good base for a 3-4 defense.
I think it was Jeff Reinbold said in the past that Pete Carroll runs a defense which is 4-3 but with 3-4 personnel. So, look, people, I don't know who said that. I don't know why, but yeah. But I think that's kind of what we're going to maybe see on Sunday because you're going to have to spy. Probably with KJ or Kendricks, you're going to have to spy the quarterback. You're going to have that extra guy for Hollywood and Mark Andrews up in the slot if both are active. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what they do on the defensive front. But also, if that leads to Clowney and Ansah being off the line, standing up, getting a bit more speed off the snap, it could be a nice way to go about it when you've got to really pen in their quarterback, haven't you?
It's a great, great game, this one.
Yeah.
I've been looking forward to it for literally since Sunday finished. I normally am kind of forget about it for a couple of days, but all I've been thinking about since the win on Sunday, apart from Spurs somehow losing to Watford on Saturday, is the Seahawks against the Ravens on Sunday. It's going to be great.
Yeah. My one to watch on the other side of the ball. It sounds ominous for Dwayne Brown, but it sounds like Dwayne Brown's going to be inactive. George Fant has to play better than he did on Sunday, didn't he? If Eddie did all right, Fant was the lowest rated player on the Seahawks on Sunday, like 34 from PFF. So he's got to play better and give this offense a chance of going against, which is, as we say, a pretty on paper alone imposing looking defense.
Yeah, it's. Again, I think the line probably held up as well as you could expect, given how patched up they were. And, you know, Myles Garrett is allowed to be good and Olivier Vernon's allowed to be good. There's been a few occasions in the past years where kind of Seahawks linemen have come in, looked okay for one game, then it's kind of regressed a bit. So I'm interested to see how that holds up because, I'm assuming that five from Sunday is going to be the same five that rolls out against the Ravens.
Yeah, I can't wait. Score prediction, confidence, Adam?
I'm confident. I think we're going to win 27-21.
I think I'm confident. I'm as confident as I was for the Cleveland Browns game, obviously. 10 point plus, I think I said. I'm going to go 30-26, if that's possible.
That sounds Scorigamish.
It does. There has been a few Scorigami instances this season, so we always have one every year, so maybe this is going to be the one.
It can't be Scorigami, but it sounds kind of... It's a weird scoreline.
I'm really looking forward to the game. There is about a round, there's probably more because obviously not everyone's active on social media and all that, but at least 18, 19 UK Seahawkers are making the trip. If anyone is listening to this on their flight over or in Seattle, there will be a get together on Friday evening at Buckley's in Balltown. I think it's Second and Battery is the. It's on the corner of there. So if anyone's around and anyone listening to this who's making the trip over from the UK or actually lives in the city, you're more than welcome to come join us for a few beverages. Moving on. Good week, bad week, Adam?
Good week, bad week. It has been a very good week for Kyler Murray.
Yeah, he looks proper.
Yeah, he does. And you know, you probably can't separate him from Cliff Kingsbury. So let's say a good week for both of them, because both of them started the year with a lot of doubts. People were very excited to kind of dump on them at the first couple of weeks of the season when they didn't look perfect. But if you look at the numbers, like the Arizona offense has made big strides on last year, which isn't hard given how bad they were last year. But I think that the two of them look like they are a nerve-wrackingly decent combination, and it's just so frustrating that again the NFC West looks like it's going to be stacked for a little while longer. Like, we just can't get out of our own way with it. It's insane.
I think it was Zach Whitman put on Twitter on Monday, it's wild that the Seahawks look in good way and there's an NFC West rival who are good in for the number one seed as well.
It's madness. It's wild.
But yeah, we call him it's kind of looked that way for a couple of weeks, but it's a big win against, I mean, Dan Quinn's a dead man walking Atlanta, but it's a team in Super Bowl 2 years ago in Kyler Murray without pretty much anyone bar Larry Fitzgerald and David Johnson to throw to is gunning that ball downfield. And I mean, some of his throws on Sunday are incredible.
It's fun to watch.
It's really fun to watch, but it's also going to be a bit of a problem going forward when they, obviously Fitzgerald is probably going to ride off into the Arizona sunset soon, but if they replace him with two or three monsters, they've got Hakeem Butler on the IR as well, who's probably going to be back next year at this point. But it's an imposing proposition, that offense. But defensively, a bit to go. But that offense, as you say, is fun. Good week for me, probably somewhat predictably, is the South Carolina Gamecocks. Adam, Ryan Alinsky didn't play all the game, but they went into Georgia, the number three team in the country, one of the favorites to be the college football national champions this year, and held on for dear life for a 2017 win in second overtime. The scenes and the videos from that, from all around, is absolutely incredible. And it's just one of those moments which college football kind of lives off the back of, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's so cool. I mean, it's good for college football. It's great for us. It's good for college football that you can have a win like that, because there's so many of these games that you roll into a Saturday, look at the slate of fixtures and think win, loss, win, loss, 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 win, 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 loss. So it's cool. It's great that can happen.
But we haven't done it this year. I don't know if we're going to do it this year at all. But two players to keep an eye on is Bryan Edwards, the wide receiver for South Carolina, who just seems to be, kind of seems like a little Sidney Rice in how he plays. He just catches absolutely everything. And also, he's maybe a bit rich for the Seahawks blood next year, but Javon Kinlaw in the center of their defensive line kind of looks like that what we were sold with Malik McDowell kind of player in that center. He's just a consistently disruptive force in the few games I've watched the Gamecocks play this year. So I think they're both going to be, well, Edwards definitely will be, I think, but Kinlaw's a junior, so he may stay. But they're two names to keep an eye on. A bad week for me, Adam. Has there been a weirder regression in recent NFL lore than Marcus Mariota, who's now been benched with Ryan Tannehill?
Very strange, isn't it?
Yeah.
And there's probably not many excuses that can be made. I mean, the coaching's not been great, but he's had enough of them. And it just doesn't look right.
No. It's not like they haven't invested. They spent a top 10 pick on Corey Davis. They spent a lot of money on Deion Lewis. Obviously, Derek Henry coming with all the Alabama buzz. They spent a lot of money on Adam Humphries. They spent money on from. Yeah, they've got Delanie Walker, who's always been a consistent threat and productive player at the tight end position. But he looks cooked, doesn't he? It looks like he just does not want to be in the middle of a huddle, does he?
No, I think. It's weird. It's a shame, but the James Winston versus Mariota debate is now basically who's worse as opposed to who's better, which is not what we expected when they both came out 5 years ago.
Yeah, and the fact that one of the dynasty leagues I'm in, I asked fellow GMs if they fancied trading for James Winston at around 11 a.m. on Sunday before he did that at the Tottenham first stadium on Sunday was bad timing on my part. Anything else? Well, there is one main thing in NFL. It went a bit crazy yesterday, Adam. Jalen Ramsey is a St. Louis Rams. LA Ram. And they give up the entire back catalogue to get him, didn't they?
Well, I can only presume that the Rams are folding their franchise as an NFL team and are actually just going to play Power League for the rest of their time and just play five-a-side, because they don't seem to be able to have any picks and they are definitely not going to have any money. So where are they going to get 53 players from? They're going to have 100 million tied up in five players.
Yeah, so who's that? Goff, Donald?
Cooks.
Oh, yeah.
And Ramsey and Gurley.
Who have they got to pay? They've got to pay Jalen, you imagine, at some point. They've got to pay Cooper Kupp soon.
Yep.
They've got nowhere.
I guess Todd Gurley will be traded, but I don't know what the terms are on his deal.
Yeah, they'll have to eat a little bit of that probably, but... Again, that and Malcolm Brown and Darnell Henderson looks right, but Malcolm, it doesn't look as good. And as we keep saying, that quarterback is not going to carry this team, but he's basically going to be going to have to, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I just don't know.
It's insane.
I guess they have to hope they can win the Super Bowl this year,
yeah.
Or otherwise they're fucked, and they're not going to win the Super Bowl this year. Yeah. So it's great.
Yeah,
absolutely great. They look like they were going to be the empire, and I just think it's crumbling. I think they've missed their big chance, and we don't have to worry about them.
No, I'm not going to go that far.
As a Super Bowl winner, yeah. I just don't know how they're going to make it work. Like, I think last year was their big opportunity. They threw the house at it last year.
Yeah.
But this year, Ramsey is obviously a lot better than Marcus Peters, but. They've lost Talib as well, so they kind of lose Marcus Peters, Aqib Talib, two first round picks, and they just get Jalen Ramsey back. Now, I'm not necessarily convinced that as a package deal for this season, that's going to be that beneficial.
I mean, the Rams traded four draft picks over the next 2 years yesterday. They traded one for the center Corbett from Cleveland.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's a Cable Thanos tweeted out the picture of the next time.
So good.
The next time it was on Get Up ESPN this morning. The next time the Rams make a first round draft pick and it's got a picture of Sean McVay with deeply, deeply grey hair. It's that, because they haven't made the last first round draft pick was Jared Goff, and they just kind of. Yeah, it's a weird way of going about it. But also, as I said, I think I may have said it to you, I may have said it in one of my other NFL conference group chats. This shows how impressive that 48-49 Super Bowl run for the Seahawks were. To get back to back-to-back Super Bowls is an incredibly hard thing to do, as the Rams are showing, Adam.
Yeah, 100%. It's just not that easy. And the fact that we've been in a transitional period and we're still 5-1 and winning games is testament to what a fantastic job they're all doing over in Seattle.
Yeah. Any NFL stuff?
No, I did just see a tweet from Neil Reynolds that said that Kevin Cadle passed away 2 years ago. Obviously, we are celebrating our 100th episode today, and Stu put out the interview on Monday, I think, of the chat we had with him a few years ago, which was great. And, yeah, just so surreal that obviously he's passed on, and two years till the day. So condolences again to Kevin's family, and hope that they're turning to good memories now.
Yeah, and also yesterday as well was a year since Paul Allen died as well. And I think when that happened a year ago, we spoke about how after what had happened that weekend in London and how much of a high we were all on, it was a pretty cruel...
Of course, it was the day after the game, wasn't it?
Yeah, so it's kind of... That's also something... you can see me walk around all around here in Seattle, and you kind of see the impact that guy had on this city and what he's doing even after he's gone, Adam.
Yeah, absolutely. Very well put.
So I think that is everything. Massive thanks to Jessamine for letting us use one of their studios here at 710 ESPN. This has been the 100th episode, Adam. How the hell have we managed this?
I don't know. It's been crazy, but, you know, shout out to you for holding down the fort amazingly as a host. Ross obviously did the first 50 or 60 episodes with us and was a massive help in getting the whole thing started. Yeah. And everyone who's listened, it's so appreciated. We'd love more interaction and, you know, anything that pops into your head, you know, just do give us a shout, give us a tweet. You know what the things are. You know, we get people like Dan Cohen's tweeted me a couple of times, which was great last week in relation to stuff that happened on the pod. So anything you do here, if you don't like something, get after us. If you do like something, tell us. It's all great because hopefully we can turn 100 into 200 in a few years time.
God, that sounds tiring.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Especially if you don't stop work till 10:30 every night.
So if you as I'm saying, we do encourage you to get involved with the podcast, all the usual means and methods. UK Seattle Seahawks fans on Facebook, UK Seahawkers on Instagram, ukseahawkers.com. Also, the Pedestrian Podcast.podbean.com, on iTunes, on Podbean, and on Spotify. On Twitter, is at Seahawkers UK. But yeah, again, massive thanks to Jess for letting us do this here. Hopefully, you enjoyed the podcast. Until next time, if you're making a trip out to Seattle, have a safe journey, and I'm sure I'll see you at some point. The tailgate is behind the Silver Cloud Hotel, and the Sea Jack, I'm told, will be flying high above, so it should be easy to spot where the majority of us UK guys will be. But until next time, this has been the Pedestrian Podcast.
Go Hawks.
Another great day for Chris. Just ran so hard and so well. The last 3 weeks, he's just been on fire. He's just so tough, and love the way he plays.